Welcome, welcome. You're listening to our podcast, Two Massage Therapists in a Microphone. My name is Mark. I'm a registered massage therapist, registered kinesiologist here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We got a real cool guest sitting on our couch. Steve Austin is back. He's hanging out with Jimi Hendrix. It's a very weird setup that's going on over there, but I kind of like the party that's happening.
It's a weird day. I like it. And we have Emma Stone back on our couch.
It's like the room is full of important people.
And then us.
We're so unimportant.
Hey guys, it's unimportant Amanda here. And
do you feel unimportant?
Do I feel unimportant?
Yes, do you feel unimportant? Do you feel like the stuff that we do is nonsense? I do. I mean, I do.
Could the world live without us? Of course they could. Are we important to some people? Sure we are.
You think so? I don't think my
children would consider me very important.
Mm-hmm. That's even debatable.
I am shocked and appalled.
I'm kidding, sir.
I was just about to say something nice about him. I was just about to say you're important to me, but now I don't know. I don't know where I'm going to go with this now.
No one's important.
I have been offended.
Do you think people that think they're important recognize that they're not important?
No. They definitely continue thinking they're important for sure.
Can I just say, when you first said, do you think you're important? I was thinking of it very differently. And there's a difference between, like, because I think everybody's probably important, like important to someone or something. Like there's, everybody has value. You're thinking it more as like, do I think I'm really important? Like as in, if I were suddenly to be gone, like the world would crumble. No, nobody is that person.
No.
Everybody is important.
Everybody's replaceable.
Everybody's important. To somebody and to something, but I mean, in the grand scheme of the world, is anybody important? No. We're all just living things. We're no more important than the bumblebees. No, actually, they're way more important.
Yeah, they're actually way more important.
I'm so glad I said bumblebees because they're the important ones.
It's when they go away, we're all gonna die when they go away.
Absolutely.
So hierarchy of the list: we got bumblebees. Steve Austin, Jimi Hendrix, tied for second. The real Emma Stone for third, and then the rest of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't think Jimi Hendrix was important?
Important, yes, important to some people.
He
was second place. But I mean, Jimi Hendrix influenced a lot of people. There's a lot of people in the music world that would consider him important. His family would have considered him important. Fans considered him important. But again, Jimi Hendrix is no longer with us. The world continued to move.
Yeah.
But I just mean...
So it depends your definition of important. Everybody's important. Everybody's valuable.
I just mean this revolutionary being who has changed the course of how people play this guitar.
And to that part of the world, Jimi Hendrix was very important. Mm. There's somebody out there right now that doesn't care about music, that doesn't listen to music. I mean, that somebody, by the way, is very lonely and possibly a sociopath.
But music is one of those weird things that
lives forever.
It lives forever. Jimi Hendrix music will be listened to hundreds of years from now. It lives forever.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think about. So
art lives
maybe he
forever.
Was important.
Maybe he was. I'm not debating. Like Tylee, not like, Emma Stone, like, said he came second.
Isn't it weird though that it's weird that you're walking around all of these history makers, especially when it comes to things like music. It's like it's insane to me. It's trippy to me. The same way you'll sit around and listen to Mozart when you're living amongst the time of Mozart writing music, you probably don't comprehend how historical this is.
Like we're surrounded by legends.
Yes.
We're living in the time of legends.
It's insane. It's so cool.
It's very cool.
But weird. I find it to be weird. I feel uncomfortable with it.
You feel uncomfortable with it?
I think I do. I don't know if maybe that's a weird way to describe it, but that's the best way I can describe it now. It's cool, but it's also uncomfortable for me. I don't know what makes me uncomfortable, but I'll think about that.
You get back to us on that.
I'll think about it.
Yeah, you get back to us.
I'm very interested
you
in
like,
knowing.
Write me a letter, messenger pigeon it to me. I'm very intrigued. But there is something beautiful about being insignificant.
Yeah.
Like when I went to...
I love being insignificant.
It's the best. Where did we go? A National Sequoia Park in California.
Yeah.
And we were near the sequoia trees. And those are giants. Those are living giants that are thousands of years old. And I remember standing there and it was only the sounds of the forest and looking up at these trees that have seen more than any human ever has. Yep. And I'm just looking at them and I was like, wow, I'm a speck of dust. Yep. Yeah. And I was like, there's something really nice about that though. Yeah. If you take that with you on every day and you think to yourself when you're doing things and you're like, oh no, what are people going to think? People don't care.
People don't care. No one cares about anything.
And that's awesome because that gives you freedom to just do you. I think that's really fucking nice.
Mm. I wish people would actually carry that with them all the time. Like, nobody cares. Be you. Don't be a dick. Yeah. I had to bring that back. And do things that are making positive impacts, even if it's in just your small circle, your community, whatever.
So
that's it.
So let me ask you a question then, because I just came back from a Black massage therapist conference.
Okay.
In Charlotte, North Carolina. And Massage Therapy Media has a magazine that's going to be coming out soon, or fall winter edition.
Winter, yeah. And we dropped the ball in the fall.
We do.
I was wondering where it was.
Too many conferences going on. We skipped fall. We're going straight to winter.
We do themes with the magazine. At least that's what we've been doing lately, right? Or has it always been?
It's always been a
theme. I don't even remember. I don't even know anymore. And so the theme for this one is kind of... Can I say it? I can say it? Yeah.
You can, yeah. It's inclusive.
It's the whole concept of being exclusive for the purpose of inclusion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
And when I went to this Black conference, I was like, yes, I get it. But I also recognize how this got so much heat and it's still going to get a lot of heat. But I was like, it's got to be exclusive for there to be this type of inclusion. And I was talking to our Massage Therapy Media conference partners about it because one of them called me last night and she's like, how was it? And I said, listen, you know when you're at home with your family, you can just fart? Right? You can just be you.
Yes.
You just fart, right?
Yes.
That's what it was like.
Yeah.
That's what it was like for every participant. No one had to think twice about anything. They felt very, very comfortable. And it was just like being around your family and you needed to fart.
Yes. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
I get it for things I've done that are all female things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I've never had to filter myself about like what men think or if they would enjoy it,
right,
or like any of that.
Everyone's
kind of stuff.
Got the shared
right.
experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone gets it. Let's do this proper.
Let's introduce our guest.
Who is important.
Who is very important to us and aww. To her husband and to August,
cat.
Her cat.
That's the biggest thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's her little baby. Tylene is back. So for those of you that listen regularly, Tylene is our Emma Stone sound-alike. I mean, there's probably some physical attributes that are similar, but it's the voice, man. She's got this famous voice. And before we ever had her on the couch, we would hear her Instagram stories and we're like, whoa, this girl sounds like Emma Stone. And then she came to the Canadian Massage Conference last year. We got to meet in person. Then we did some podcasts. There's actually a picture of us with
right
Emma Stone behind Mark's head right now. It just lives in our office. So she sent an email after this past Canadian Massage Conference because she came again, which we were so excited that you decided to come again.
Oh, I had to.
And this time you actually stayed the whole time.
Yes.
Yes. Last year you were only able to come for like 1 or 2 days. Then this year you got to come for the whole conference, which was super fun. And she sent a really nice email after about how much fun she had and meeting all the people and networking and all the different classes she took. And she was like, hey, I'd like to come back on the podcast and talk about this and this and this and this. And basically, it was everything, like anything and everything. I'm like, cool, come on in. We will have no lack of things to talk about. So for those that didn't hear your first episode, let's reintroduce you. Who are you?
I'm Tylene Lee. I am an RMT. I graduated from Sutherland Chan in 2021.
Did you meet Grace and Christine when you're at the conference?
Oh my gosh. So it's funny. You were talking earlier about legends and how you feel... I don't know, like small compared to them, or it makes you uncomfortable or something like that. And that's how I see Grace.
Mm.
That's how I see Grace Chan. When I see her, I'm just like, I get butterflies, like I'm meeting a celebrity and I'm like,
and she is physically a very small person. Oh they both are. They're legends and they're very big people, but they're very small people.
It's interesting because I don't think they recognize the impact that they have.
No,
they're so
not at all.
Humble, those two women.
Yes.
Like,
oblivious, which
I think a mixture of both.
They're definitely not oblivious. I mean, they both recognize their accomplishments, but they also look at all of the other therapists they're teaching as having the exact same capability as them. That's why they wanted to teach that class.
The more I hear them talk, the more I'm like, I don't think Grace really thinks of them as accomplishments. Like, no. The rest of us think of it as an accomplishment. Like, oh, you changed around, like, how massage therapy education works in all of Canada. Oh, you were involved. Like, you started the Canadian Sport Massage Therapy Association. Yep. You've done so much work with the associations in the States and all the rest of it. Like, I don't know if she views them as accomplishments or just, this is something that I just do.
She definitely does view them as accomplishments. Like, when she did her talk last year, she spoke about all these things and all the hard work that went into it. And she knows that, you know, it's not for the faint of heart. Is that the saying? Fair. Yeah. She knows that. But she also, as I said, the reason they wanted to teach that class, which was teaching the teachers, I can't remember what the name of the class was, but at the conference on, I think it was on the Saturday afternoon, Grace and Christine paired up to teach a class that's for people who want to get a massage therapy education and how you do that and how you go about doing something like incredible like they did and changing around all the curriculum. And they wanted to do that because they look at all of the massage therapists as being just as capable. You just have to want to do it. Like, the two of them had the desire to do this, so they did it. But I mean, they always say to Mark and I, like, what you guys are doing is incredible. And I'm like, no, what you did is incredible. And they're like, yeah, but now you guys are doing it.
It's weird when people tell me that, especially really? Coming from those two. I was standing outside vaping.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, okay, I guess they were getting together to go for dinner. So now they're both standing in front of me, and they're just really saying nice things about me, and I felt really uncomfortable. I literally ran away. I'm like, guys, I gotta go. And I left them standing there. I just like hightailed it inside because it felt very uncomfortable.
Well, and that is that. That's how.
But they're hip ladies, man. That's the best way to describe them for me. They're just hip ladies. Yeah.
I've talked to Grace quite a few times. Still get butterflies every time, but she's so lovely.
Yeah.
She's so great to talk to. She's down to earth. I talk to her just like she's a relative. I'm just like, oh, I'm so comfortable with her. And I feel that immediately.
Is it because your husband's Chinese? It's like my aunt.
Mama, is that you?
Oh boy. Well, I mean, you can understand Grace then, because just like you feel sort of a level of discomfort when people are like giving you praise for all the things
with
you've
that
done.
Shit anyway.
Right. And so you can understand Grace as much as like she might know that she's done things that other people haven't done and that she's been sort of this trailblazer. She doesn't want to hear it all the time. And
true.
To your point about her just being like so lovely and comfortable, like she still gets nervous when she has to speak in front of people. Oh. She'll come to me right before getting on stage and say like, is my hair okay? Am I okay? Like she's just a regular person who's done really freaking important things. Grace is important to people who are in this world. Right.
Yeah.
But yes, Grace has made a huge impact and she's important, but are there people outside of the massage world who have no idea who she is?
Totally.
Yeah, totally. Sorry, we cut you off to praise Grace. You went to Sutherland Chan and then you graduated in 2021. So like the worst time to graduate.
Oh, it was horrible. Not to mention that's when I had my two major concussions. Yeah, I had one in February. I had one in November right afterwards. So I had to pull myself out. I passed the third semester. And then I had to stay out for a while and then join into the fourth semester for the following.
What was the mechanism for the concussion?
The first one, I was embracing my inner old lady and I was doing curling.
Okay.
Tripped over my own feet and smoked the back of my head, which is great because my brain was like, let's hit the back and the front of your skull. And I was like, ah, very nice. But the worst part about it was during COVID. So I got no help for it. I was just sent home and like, hope for the best. And
so
then,
are you curling with a bunch of old ladies too when this happens?
I curl with my old man. I love him so much. He's in his 40s. So now he's like, I'm old. I'm like, you're nothing. It's 40. That's it. Like, that's nothing.
Oh, you're talking about your husband?
Yeah.
I thought she was actually like talking about like maybe her dad when she said old man. And then she's like, he's in his 40s. I'm like, well, if your dad's in his 40s, I have so many questions.
Okay. So
you got to get with the slang, the old school slang, old man, old lady.
Or in Chinese, my lo gong.
You guys are both laughing, and I'm like, I have a Chinese husband too, but I don't get it.
It's just old man in Chinese.
Got it.
And then my other one was I was a pedestrian hit by a car in November.
Whoa.
And I got it was a gentle love tap.
How does this happen, getting hit by a car?
Well, I was looking on my phone, crossing at a crosswalk, and they were making a right hand turn, but I guess they were checking like left to see if any cars were coming.
Yeah.
And we both kissed, and my back of my head kissed their front of the hood. Mm. But it was the same spot that I hit in February.
The back of your head.
Yeah.
So they clipped you from behind.
Yeah. It was great.
Like you almost walked fully past the car.
And then they just came clipped up behind me.
God.
And you fell onto your back.
Yeah. I fell a head hit first.
Did they stop and get out or did they drive off?
Yeah. So when I get hurt, I'm one of those people that's immediately embarrassed. So I'm like, I'm okay. I'm totally fine. No, it's cool. I'm so good. We exchanged no information. And then they drove off. And then I think I got like a block or two down the street. And then I had to go to the hospital. And then I started to lose my ability to talk and to walk and to all that fun stuff. So I was in the hospital for a few days.
How freaked out are you when this happens?
Blood pressure went down.
Whoa.
Yeah.
How freaked out are you when this happens? Like you lose the ability to do shit.
You know what's funny? I didn't even get to feel panic because I just wasn't there with the concussion. Like, it wasn't even that I got to feel panic. It was just like, just things were shutting down. I just couldn't figure, I didn't have the comprehension to panic.
Right.
Like, it was just like, whoa.
You got two blocks and realized, like, I'm not okay. Like, did you call someone? Did you walk yourself to a hospital? Like,
I got an Uber.
Mindful enough to sit down and jump on the Uber.
Like, things were just like going and it was not good. And then, I went to the hospital. It was COVID still. So my husband wasn't allowed to join me in the hospital. And I was there for 2 days.
Did anyone witness this accident?
Not that I know of.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It's interesting that would happen and no one would get up and say something.
Yeah. But
I understand that though. I'm very similar. Like, I act like everything's fine. Like, right after getting hurt, I think everybody initially you might be in a little bit of shock. You don't even recognize what just happened.
Yeah, that's true.
So when I was maybe 13 years old, I went somewhere I wasn't supposed to, like lied to my mom, went somewhere I wasn't supposed to, and
horrible.
Got my foot run over by a car.
What?
So many people witnessed this accident. So somebody yells out his car window. So he was driving, through a green light. He couldn't just stop in the middle of the intersection, but he yelled out his window, calling 911. Because like he watched.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm going, no.
How did you flick it run over?
So exactly the same as Tyleen. The light turned green, like the little walking person came up and so it was my right of way.
Yeah.
I started to cross the road and didn't realize that somebody was going to make a right.
Yeah.
And this person didn't stop. Ran over my foot, realized he had run over my foot.
Just kept going.
And he looks at me and he goes, I'm so sorry. And he reverses and runs over my foot again.
What?
Like he went forward and then backward over my foot.
Double damage.
Because because I was in the intersection. Anyway, and then I'm one, embarrassed. And two, I'm like, shit, I'm going to get in trouble. I'm not supposed to be here. So everybody's trying to make a big deal. Like, are you okay? And I'm like, guys, I'm totally fine. To the driver, didn't exchange any information, nothing. I'm totally fine. It was an accident. I'm like, be more careful next time. Like, just get out of here. And so I'm like, I got to get out of here before an ambulance shows up.
I grew 2 foot sizes.
I hobbled home and did not tell my mom until a couple days later when I was like, I think my foot might be broken.
Oh my God, what's your foot look like?
So I never did actually go get x-rays, never did go get it checked out.
This is when we were younger. We didn't do that back then.
I was young and stupid. I walked it off. This foot has definitely never been the same. Like if I jump from any kind of height and I land on my feet, like my entire foot feels like it's on fire.
Oh my God.
Like it burns. I just mean like if I like, like the impact goes through my foot, it just burns. Like definitely this foot was damaged.
This is why we take a full health history, folks.
Yeah, I do yoga sometimes and this particular foot, if I have to balance on it, I'm like, nope, like that's not happening. It starts to burn. Like the pain is burning pain constantly.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And that was from when I was 13.
Holy. I never play off getting, when I'm hurt, you know, because I swear non-fucking stop. it's, nice. You'll know. and I'll let you know. I'm fucking hurt. Yeah. Shoulder, fucking head, fucking foot.
That is true.
I fucking believe that it's
but
bad.
I love that. I know you're hurt.
He scratched his butt cheek in the bathroom this morning. Ow. I knew about it.
Yeah.
That does really hurt, though.
I was like, fuck! Who the fuck put this here?
The faucet?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how I was yelling. I'm like, who the fuck designed this fucking shower? I was screaming.
No, he was so angry. But anyway, so I understand you not making a big deal out of it, because I do that. When I had a concussion in 2020, I was in a car accident, and immediately after the accident, I was just more upset that, one, my kids were in the car, two, now my car was fucked. It was like, $5,000-$6,000 worth of damage. Like, my car was fucked. So I'm just angry and not even recognizing, like, I'm dizzy. I have a headache. I'm like kind of seeing blurry, but like none of that hit me till hours later that I'm like, I'm not okay, actually. I probably should have gone to the hospital.
I don't know how I've never had a concussion.
Congratulations.
I've been in like two really, really bad car accidents.
What?
Like, one of them, my car was a complete write-off. Like, the front of my car was like an accordion.
Oh, jeez.
I was going way too fast. In like a 60. I must be doing like an 80 and a 60.
Oh, spicy.
And this lady made a left-hand turn in front of me.
Oh, no.
Like, I didn't brake. I went back the next day to kind of just check out what's going on. And like, there are no skid marks from my car.
What?
I did not even brake. Just full on smash into the passenger side of her car.
Holy.
I'm surprised. And I've had two motorcycle accidents.
How was that?
One of the motorcycle accidents was bad enough that like my bike was a write-off. My frame was bent.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
How are you walking?
And that day when you got in that accident.
I fucked up my shoulder, I fucked up my ankle, fucked up my hip.
I had a newborn baby. So he just like, he really played it off with me, I guess, maybe not to stress me out.
Yeah.
But he comes home. And he's like, I think I better go to the hospital and just get some x-rays. But he was acting like everything's fine.
Because
like,
everyone was
you just
at my house.
You got thrown off a fucking
motorcycle. Your parents were visiting.
Well, with the newborn baby.
And your parents were visiting.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, well, like, you can't leave now. So I jumped into my little two-seat convertible, which is stick. And that was the most difficult drive I've ever had to
say,
do.
What?
Yeah, that was. I should have just Ubered.
Oh, my God. Uber is amazing.
Did Uber exist 10 years ago?
This was about 10 years ago, but it wasn't as good, because now I could get an Uber to pick me up off a sidewalk. But I remember, I don't know why, you remember, you just remember the dumbest things in life. I'm like, why do I remember this? I remember being with a friend and we were outside and Uber wouldn't pick us up because we didn't give it
a
specific
address. Right.
And I was like, come on, Uber, just come here and pick me up.
Come on, Uber.
Like, come on.
You know, I'm Googling right now.
But now it does.
Okay, so yes, Uber started in 2009 in San Francisco.
Ew.
So when did it come to Canada?
It sucks. So I drove myself to the hospital. And then the whole time
I'm at
the hospital, I just have my mother's voice inside my head. Because I don't wear underwear ever. Like, I haven't worn underwear since.
Why are you wearing underwear?
Exactly. I haven't worn underwear since high school. And so my mother was always like, you're going to find yourself in the hospital because you had an accident and you're going to regret it. And the doctor's like, let me check out your hip.
That.
And he moves the gown and it's like, cock and balls. Sorry, bro.
That happened once before.
This can't be the first time.
In 2008, no, Mark was in an accident and I'm the one that took him to the hospital. And he's on, they had given him some kind of strong ass painkillers because this was a pretty bad accident.
Yeah.
And so he's laying on this table and he's all like
high
drugged up, high as a kite. We had been dating maybe 2 months. That was the best part. So I'm sitting beside him and he looks at me and he's just giggling like a little girl. I'm like, what's so funny? He's like, my bare ass is on this hospital bed. Like, yeah, maybe you should. And actually, even that day, you're like, my mom was right.
Yeah. The old lady was right.
The amount of times she's been right.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Anyway.
Sorry, okay, yeah.
So then you had two concussions after graduating massage school.
Do those still fuck you up now?
Okay, great thing about the Canadian Massage Conference. What a wonderful time. Great experience. Loved it. And one of the people that had... Okay, this is also really funny. One of the people that had a big impact on me was everyone was calling him Sean, but there was no way I was calling him Sean. No, I was calling him Sean Michael because Sean Michaels. And I was like, no, there's no way I can't call him Sean Michaels. You darn right. I messaged all my friends in my wrestling group chat. I was like, I'm with Sean Michaels, guys.
Oh my gosh, she has a wrestling group chat. Why am I surprised by
this? It's called Royal Rumble. Constantly sharing things. And I was like, Shawn Michaels. And he'd always look around like, oh, it's obviously you. You're the only one calling me this. Which I went up to him, by the way. And I was like, come on. You've had to have people come up to you and say like, oh, you're Shawn Michaels. He's like, you know, it's been a long time. And you're the first girl that said it to me. And I was like, yes. But anyways, great guy for concussion work. Fantastic. He's amazing. Holy. So I'm in this room with, there must have been 50, 60 other people. Yeah. And he goes, everyone who has a concussion, raise your hand. Me and I think there were 6 other people. So we went up to the front of the room. And then my favorite expression is they tear you apart. But it's like, you know, they're just looking at everything. They're right, just right, seeing like what's different and all this. And it was interesting because depending on where you get hit in your head, he had this up on the board, depends on, it'll show the different symptoms that you would get.
Right.
And my symptoms lined up perfectly with somebody who's been hit in the back and front of the brain. And funny enough, I don't mind to everyone knowing, this is totally fine because I tell everybody, I get filler and Botox done.
Okay.
And I get a brow lift on the right side of my face for my brow, and I get some filler because the right side of my face was like drooping more, mm-hmm, which is actually a symptom of the concussions that I had no idea of. Mm. I didn't know that
was
a thing.
Did you think like, oh, I'm getting old on one side of my face?
I just thought it was drooping on the one side, and I was like, all right, I guess that's the thing.
Time for Botox.
Yeah. So Botox, filler, all that fun stuff. And then there was like other symptoms that they were pointing out, and they're like, even if you hadn't told us, or no, they pointed out all the symptoms first and then got us to tell our stories about the concussions. Mm. And I was like, that's wild. So he worked on me because he's like, he's like, you're the most dramatic for the symptoms. I was like, beautiful. Love that. I think I'm a walking sunshine, but cool. Turns out I'm a rotting orange. He did work. Oh my gosh, it was wild. Stood up afterwards and like, I remember, okay, so first everyone in the room was like, oh my God, you look so different. But I'm that kind of person that's like, bullshit.
Right. You're bullshit. Full of it.
Yeah. All 60 of you, full of shit. Like, you're all liars. You're all just really hyped up on all this information. This room of just pathological liars. So after that session, I actually went into the bathroom and then I was looking at myself. I'm like, all right.
Did you look different?
All right. I'm like, let's not fake it. Like, walk it off. No, I look different. I was shocked. I was just like,
that's
what?
Really cool. I should mention that Shawn Michaels and osteo, because really treating concussion is out of scope for RMTs.
Yeah.
It's really important for RMTs to understand concussion, though. Yeah. There's a lot of therapists that teach about concussion, mm-hmm, because it's really important for us to recognize symptoms and understand this stuff. And it's good to be mindful of this in our own treatments, because there are things we can do to help mitigate symptoms and manage them. Like, we're not treating concussion. Shawn, a little bit different because he's coming from the osteo perspective where he can do a little bit more than we can do, but it's really cool.
Not to speak negative, but I'm curious because I don't think I would do that in my class, is pull a bunch of people up and kind of do this assessment on them without giving them any kind of thing beforehand. Like, hey, I'm going to do this. I'm going to bring you up. We're going to talk about all these things here. And let me know if you're uncomfortable with any of this. Because if you're uncomfortable, then we're not going to do this.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel like watching it and then having that done to you? Like, fuck, I wish I never put my hand up.
Okay. You know what's really funny about me?
Yeah.
I love attention. I mean, I remember when I went to Korea for my honeymoon, and people were like, hey, like, you're white, you're going to get looked at a lot. They don't get as many tourists. I hope you're prepared for that. Like, people are going to walk up to you. They're going to stare at you. They're going to ask for pictures, all that sort of stuff. And I was like, fuck yes. Like, oh my God,
great.
My time has come. My time has come. And sure enough,
did that happen?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It happened all the time, especially because my husband's Chinese. So we got a lot of people like pointing. For the record, we got that when we first started dating in Toronto, like the melting pot. And this was like a decade ago. And we would have so many people that would look at my husband. look at my husband. And you give him a thumbs up. And I'm like, okay. Like, I saw that. Cool. All right.
But yeah, we never got attention. That. So now not only was I offended at the top of the episode, now I'm feeling really self-conscious about not being the white girl that gets a thumbs up with the Asian guy.
Well, I mean, I should be offended more than anybody else.
Why?
He's like, where's my thumbs up? But Steve's got us.
Her husband got a thumbs up because, like, yeah, look at this white girl you got.
Right.
People don't
You didn't
care.
Get a thumbs up because they're looking at me going, oh, you lost on that.
Oh, no.
No, it's the other way around. No.
Where's that sound?
Why is this not the first time I've heard this today? But, exactly. Yeah, so attention's great. So, and, yeah, I'm well aware that how things can go during, you know, right. If you're going to volunteer yourself. And I volunteer all the time, for stuff.
So if someone is, you're at a comedy show and there's someone that's doing hypnosis, are you putting your hand
up? Okay, so that's You've really funny. That's one of the things I've wanted to talk about today is things that people swear, like, it works. They swear on their soul. They're like, this works 100%.
Yeah.
And I'm that person that's like, no, it doesn't. I know it doesn't, but I want to try it.
Okay.
I want to do it because I want it to be real. Like, I really want it to be real.
Right.
Like,
that was part of the email that you sent after the conference, which was because, of course, we had presenters that were talking about research and evidence, and, you know, that was part of the conference. And then there was also techniques being shown that maybe don't have as much research behind them, but it was fascinating to learn about. And there's that whole, I think a lot of therapists feel that, where it's like, you know, you take some sort of technique or modality that doesn't have a lot of evidence behind it, but you're like, I've watched it work. I've done it myself. Mm-hmm. I've felt it work. There's no real explanation for it. Is it placebo? Is there something to it? Like, what do we think?
And I mean, I've listened to your guys' podcast, obviously. And I know you guys have done these things. You guys did Reiki and you were like, oh my God, like I really felt something. And it's just interesting. I feel like I'm one of your listeners, and I'm sure there's many that are sitting there and it's like, you're so full of shit. Like, and I mean that in the nicest way, but it's just like, and I think it's one of those things like, oh, by the way, I mean, I don't think you're full of shit, but I do. And it's a weird feeling on the inside because, like, you know, I hear you guys. You guys are so honest. Why would you guys make shit up? You have no reason to. Mm-hmm. There's no reason for you guys to sit there and blow smoke up our ass. That's not your guys' style. And you're listening to it, but it's just, it's so hard to believe.
Yeah.
That you're like, how can someone put their hands like above you and saying like, I'm in your energy and I'm moving it and I'm pushing it. And you're sitting there and you're like, fuck off. Like, no, you're not. But like, but at the same time, So my belief system, I'm agnostic because who am I to say what is and isn't in this world? Like, yeah. I'm just, again, I'm an insignificant speck of dust. And I don't think I have the right to say what is and isn't. And if somebody, it's like pain. If somebody's feeling pain and there's no thing showing why they are, who are you to tell them that they're not feeling pain?
Right.
Like, they're feeling pain. So who am I to say if Reiki's working or not? But then my brain is sitting there and going like, trying to find an explanation for it. And so my brain's sitting there going, okay, Reiki, like, people are working, they're stressed out, they're doing stuff all day long. Back in the day, if we take a shit for an hour, we're sitting there like reading like the funnies out of a newspaper or something, you know, we got our magazine stand. Now we're on our phone, we're still working when we're taking a shit. That's wild. And people don't get a second to really rest and not do anything anymore. We're constantly doing stuff. But now you're in a room. It's dark. You have 60 minutes where you are not supposed to do anything. You're not supposed to sit there and work or to sit there and try to figure out your bills. All of a sudden, you're with this person who's guiding you and being like, hey, like, you know, sit there and like reconnect with your body, reconnect with breathing, like just be you, be in your mind. And nobody gets that anymore. So how is that even like that not beneficial? Like, that is so beneficial. And then people are like, oh my gosh, like, I'm feeling better. And I'm like, of course you're feeling better. You just got 60 minutes to like be you for once. But that's then true. At the same time, people are like, oh, but I felt like the energy being pushed. And I took shiatsu And that was a really great time. Shiatsu is also dealing a lot with energy flow and all of that. I took it thinking more like I would like more techniques for like deep pressure and like how to properly hold my body. Like that's what I went in with it. Which, by the way, I won that shiatsu class from the last Canadian Massage Conference.
Oh, yeah. No, I knew that.
Fantastic. And it was great because the instructor, when he was talking to me about it, he said, he's like, you want to what? I will translate for you so that you can accept more about what we're doing. And I was like, whoa. So when he was saying like, hey, instead of talking about like the energy flow and stuff like that, he's like, focus on like your center of balance and feel. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this makes more sense. But it's interesting because it's what he's saying where I'm transferring like my center of balance from like my feet and I'm using it through my hands. And he's like, yeah, but we just call it energy. And I'm like, it kind of blew my mind because I was like, oh my God, it's just different words. It's like, oh, we're using this and it's what we have in our body, but we're using like different words for things. So then I go back to Reiki and I'm like, you know, there's this beautiful thing about it. It gives to people, but then also it's like, is it our mind powering things as well? Because our mind is so powerful on what our body goes through. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I don't know. It's something I'm battling with as a person, being like, I want to understand it. I want it to make sense. But also like, do I have to?
Do you as a person, you need it to make sense?
I find that's where my brain always goes.
Yeah.
Like I can't, for
you
some
can't
reason,
just accept
I can't
it without it making sense.
And I think it's my deal with like religion and stuff where people are like, well, you just have to believe. And I'm like, I can't, I can't do it. I can't just, I don't know why. I've tried, I have a therapist. Shocking. No, anyone who knows me is not shocked, but she's fantastic. And just going to put this out there, guys, if you go on my website, www.tylenermt.com, and you go into my like outsource stuff, it's psychotherapy. I have a link on there for anybody who feels like they need therapy. It's fantastic. It's with students, but it's way more affordable. $50 for 50 minutes. Or if you can't afford that, you could work out something else. So putting that out there. But I've had her for over a year now, and she's lovely. But we figured out that I'm also... It's because I want it to be real, but I'm so afraid of being tricked. I'm so afraid of like it tricking me and like it's not real, which in the end, like, so what? If it helped, who cares? Who cares if it isn't real? If it helped you, then it helped you. But for some reason in my head, I'm like, no, it's because I want it to be real so bad.
But if it helps you, then isn't it real?
Right? Oh, there you go. If it helps you, then it's real.
This is what I've been saying for 5 years with a lot of things that don't have a lot of evidence behind them. Mm-hmm. I can't throw out 3,500 years of history with certain things as, well, there's no evidence. There might not have been because 3,500 years ago, these ancient civilizations just realized that this works and they just passed it down and there's no real like writing about it. It was just taught and passed down and passed down and passed down. And 3,500 years later, we're still using something.
That's like, say something.
To me, that's, I understand where you're going with it. Cause I get the same way. Like I get skeptical about Reiki. I mean, I think when we did the episode, I was like, I was so skeptical about Reiki. Like to me, it also made no sense. I'm like, so you're just going to like hover your hands above me. But then if you listen to me discussing my experience, like I was smelling certain things.
Yeah.
I was getting like visuals of things.
It was near your shoulder, right?
Yeah. There was a lot of things that were happening. And like later on when she was telling me what she was feeling, it all aligned. It's like, you know, when you're talking about getting pulled up with the concussion thing, everything she was telling me after aligned with what I was feeling and like seeing and smelling. And I'm like, what the fuck? So again, there's something happening. And yes, I could say, oh, it's placebo and it might be, but it was just so wildly specific that I'm like, something else was going on.
I don't need it to make sense to me ever. As long as it makes sense to the person that's doing it, then I'm fine. The same way, guess what? You're fixing my transmission and it makes no sense to me, but it makes sense to you. So I'm just going to trust in what you do. And then you're going to fix my car and I'm not going to feel weird about driving it after.
The problem people have is you can find the mechanism as to why the transmission works versus like, certain other things that we're like, but, we don't know why this works.
But the person that's doing it is explaining to you how they believe it to work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. It's weird. Do you think there's a place for this type of stuff at conferences?
Because I do.
Because we get a lot of blowback.
Oh, yeah.
About having things like this at conferences. And that's one of the reasons why we also make sure that we have a lot of the other stuff where we have highly respected professionals that are super evidence informed in what they do and teach. And that's the nice other side of this other stuff that we sometimes have. Why do you think it's okay to have these at conferences, and how do you talk to someone?
I think it's very important to have these things at conferences alongside everything else.
So, why do you think so? And how do you explain that to someone that thinks that there's no way that this should be there?
I think it should be there because it does exist. And I think that is something that it's a part of it. It's I don't know. It's so funny because in my brain, I'm immediately like, of course we should have it. Why wouldn't we? Even as somebody who's like, I'm trying to figure this out. And I'm just like, oh, this is horse shit. But I think we definitely should have it because they are getting results. It is doing something. And it is a part of the world that we're in. And I think if we were to cut it out, like we don't have evidence right now.
But are we doing a disservice by putting a highlight on something like that? This is the argument. This is pseudoscience, and you're highlighting pseudoscience, and you're help making it popular. I don't think I'm helping make anything popular, by the way.
Yeah.
No, it's fair. not at our format for sure, because all we're just trying to do is exactly what Tylene just said. We look at all different parts of the profession, the way that different therapists practice, what they want, the continuing ed they're interested in, and we try to offer up that variety and a little bit of everything, and we try to put things next to each other that you would never see next to each other. We do the same thing with Massage Therapy Media. I know you have a membership, so you know that. You can be 1 minute watching something about research and evidence, and the next minute you're watching something about energy. And we do that very intentionally just to showcase all of the different avenues that are possible, but also to maybe expand your mind a little bit, maybe introduce you to something you never would have seen before that might make you decide, I'm going to look into this further. I'm going to look and see if there is evidence. Why does this work? And I don't think knowledge and education is ever a bad thing, especially if, you know, your neighbor, if you're working in a, you know, multi-therapist clinic and the person next to you is doing cranial sacral or Reiki or acupuncture or acupressure or reflexology or one of the other things that you might think, it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Well, wouldn't you love to know a little bit more? Wouldn't you love to know if, like, when your patients are saying, what is that therapist doing? Tell me about this. What are you going to say? Like, nonsense? They're doing nonsense?
Which I think is so disrespectful.
Right.
Like, I think that I've heard this before. And I just think they're so disrespectful. Like, they're just doing nonsense. And I'm like, okay, well, like, that's your opinion. And you're allowed to have your opinion.
Absolutely.
But I don't think that you're allowed to, like, take a profession that, again, is getting results
and be like, around for thousands of years.
I even said that the last episode. Say anything you want.
Yeah.
But do me a favor. Just preface it with, I don't know much about it, but I think it's garbage. Then cool, right? Versus I'm in this position of somewhat authority with you as my client, and I'm just going to say it's garbage without the preface of I've never studied it. I don't necessarily know the ins and outs of it, but I don't see how this makes sense.
Which I think is abuse of power, because you do have a power dynamic with all your clients. They're looking at you like you know what you're talking. The amount of clients I've had say, like, hey, you're the expert. You do it. And I'm like, okay, already, like, you're trusting everything I say. That's a power dynamic. And if I'm going to sit there and be like, hey, this is garbage, I think that's a slight abuse of power.
There's always a way to approach things with patients. So if you're somebody that doesn't understand something like reflexology, I'll use that as the example, because I used to get shit on all the time because I took reflexology and I started incorporating it. And it was like, well, that just doesn't make sense. You're not doing this. You're not cool. You don't have to think that I am doing anything with
doing
reflexology.
A nice foot massage.
That's what you think. And that is totally fine. But there is a way to, like, for example, I went to get acupuncture 4 different times. Yeah. I'm not comparing acupuncture and reflexology. I recognize they're hugely different, but I'm using this as an example because I went to get acupuncture 4 different times from 4 different practitioners. And when I say 4 different times, like on 4 different treatment plans for different reasons throughout my life, I have never had positive results from acupuncture.
Okay.
That does not mean I think acupuncture is garbage. Mm. I don't think it's nonsense. There are people who swear that it works for them. Apparently, I'm not one of those people.
Yeah.
I had no positive results from any acupuncture treatments I've ever had. So for me, I took that sort of out of the plan. You know, it's no longer part of my health and wellness plan because it doesn't do anything for me.
Not working for you.
Reiki actually did something for me. I don't know why, but it did.
But
acupuncture did nothing. So when I have patients who start asking me things like, well, what do you know about acupuncture? You know, my chiropractor said that acupuncture might benefit me for this, this, or whatever. You know, I suffer from migraines. My chiropractor said try acupuncture. My response always is, every person's body is going to respond differently to different treatments. One, you have to feel comfortable with the treatment. You have to believe in this treatment. You know what I mean? Like there's, because when people are like, oh, I don't know if I believe it. Well, if you go in thinking this is absolute nonsense, it's not going to do anything. Sometimes you might be surprised, but sometimes you might be looking for it to do nothing also. But there's a way to approach it in that it didn't really work out for me. It's not, and it's not something I know a lot about, but I encourage people, go try it out, have an open mind, see what you think about it, and maybe it will work for you, maybe it won't, but there's no reason to shit on somebody else's modality or profession or whatever it is they're doing, because for a lot of people it really, really works. Reflexology people swear by it. There's a Thai massage exam happening right in front of me outside in the big room,
and
some people think
it.
Thai massage is garbage, but also has been around for thousands of years. And
still
the people who are really, really into Thai massage swear that this is the only way.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, there's a guy out there in full Thai gear, I'm sure.
And he ain't even Thai.
And he's not even Thai.
Not even Thai.
Although he taught me Thai massage actually did not originate in Thailand, guys. It originated in India.
Yeah, well,
that's your thing today.
That outfit is very Thai, so.
Yes, that outfit is very Thai. So, maybe the outfit came from India, too, for all we know.
I grew up my whole life with the lamest Thai jokes of all time. So I have to throw one out there and be like, I'm the only Thai person in this room.
I think I might have one of those.
Yeah.
I would have laughed if he would have done the wah, wah.
Like, so would you jump up on stage and volunteer when the comedian hypnotist is going to make you cluck like
a
chicken?
For something like that, I would have two thoughts going in my head. One, I would want to go because I'd be like, oh man, like, is this going to work? But then a part of me wouldn't want to go because...
What if it works?
I love a good... No, you know what's funny? The fact, like, what if it doesn't? Because I love a good show. And I'm like, I don't want to mess it up. I'm like, if someone's going to go up there and if they're going to go all out and be like, even like, just embrace it and just do what he says for the sake of doing it. Like, I don't know if I could. And I don't want to ruin it. I just don't want to be that person where after the show, they're like, couldn't you be a good sport? And they're like, no. Like, I don't want to be that person.
Thanks for ruining
I'd
my
rather,
Friday
yeah,
night.
Right? I'd rather do it in private with like maybe like a therapist who's like, I'm going to hypnotize you so you like cilantro. Never going to happen.
I'm the only cilantro lover in this room.
That's interesting.
You want to know what? Cilantro is actually kind of along like a metaphor for things too, where it's like, I cannot stand cilantro. I hate it with a passion. And then other people love cilantro.
Well, it tastes different.
And they're like, it's so good. And I'm like, I
put that shit on everything.
Yeah, see? It's your Frank's Red Hot Sauce.
Yes.
I wish I could like cilantro.
Cilantro.
Because people say it sound is so good.
So good.
I wish I could like it. And I feel like that's with some other modalities where people are like, no, it works so well. And I'm like, I wish it could work for me like that. But like acupuncture does not work for me either.
Not at all.
Not in the slightest.
Yeah, cilantro is one of those things.
It's just, and don't trick me, people. Coriander is the same effing thing.
Well, it is the same thing.
It is. It's just different
it's
names.
It's like one has budded and one hasn't or something. It's the exact same.
They're the exact same thing.
I think there's possibly a slight difference in taste. But anyway, they are the same. Somebody's going to come at me now.
One's
for that.
Ivory soap, the other's Dove. Yeah.
But with cilantro, it's not even like I don't like this taste. I don't like this flavor. It's deeper than that.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
This is poison.
This is poison.
Like
exactly.
your lizard brain is yep. like, oh no, this is actually
well,
going to harm
doesn't
you.
Doesn't it like taste like soap to you?
Yeah,
like you're one of those people.
Like 10% of the population yeah. can't do cilantro.
And he will, it's even genetic. If it's even if it's like a tiny little like
it ruins
dot,
the whole dish.
Everything.
He will, yep. that's it. Like if that yep. little bit gets in his mouth, then that's all he tastes it's for ruined. The rest. So there's a restaurant close by here, and I didn't know this until one night.
You're
him and I decided to go
me.
On a date night, and we go to this restaurant.
Everything.
There's nothing about this restaurant that would make you think that they put cilantro in literally everything.
Oh, no.
So we go
I
to the
drank
restaurant
a lot that night because that's all I could have
we're,
done.
We're reading the menu, and I'm recognizing a lot of like the salads and wraps and all these things have cilantro. So then I find this rice dish,
okay,
and I'm reading it. It says nothing about cilantro. So I said,
fucking
Mark, I think this
covered.
Is what you should get. The rice had little bits of cilantro. Like you can't
all
pick cilantro
it.
Out of
oh
the rice.
God. Stop doing this, people.
Yeah.
Stop doing it. Put
yeah,
it on the
was,
sign.
He was so mad.
Or
there
label.
Was cilantro freaking everywhere.
And, like don't put it in like lowercase either. You need to capitalize the word cilantro when it's in a dish. Put a
but
warning
that's
on it.
Different. That's different than like I don't like the taste of coffee. It's like I cannot have this because it will taste really bad. It'll make me feel gross. It might give me a headache and blah, 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 blah.
And
blah.
I just lose my appetite.
Speaking of coffee, Tylene came bringing yes. gifts today. I don't know how much you're going to like it, but I'm in love with it. It's a candle from a company that I'm going to let you give them a shout out because she actually sent an email after the CMC and said, if you guys need vendors, like this company is amazing. So it's a Canadian company. They make these. Are they soy candles?
Yeah.
And they smell, they all have different scents and like really fun names. So this one is called Adulting is Hard. Mm. And it smells like Arabica beans, vanilla, and caramel. So it smells like a coffee,
yeah.
like a really sweet.
Oh. A coffee smell doesn't
oh,
bother me.
Oh, that smells
me.
So
it's
good.
It's
and I love that it's called Adulting is Hard. What's the candle company name? Is this it at the bottom?
It's called 151.
151. Yeah.
She's amazing.
Shout
she's
out to this candle
Ontario.
Maker because this smells amazing.
Oh man, she makes it herself.
Isn't it so fucking weird?
Oh.
It's so fucking weird. Every time I see someone that does something like this, I'm like, God damn it, they lied to me. I didn't need university. Right? So many things. I'm like, I didn't need to fucking go to school at
That's
all.
So true.
Unbelievable. Oh. I feel duped. You know what I mean?
Yep. Oh, yeah. They had us. They had us.
We
they just wanted our money.
Duped. Yeah. There's young people now that are actually starting to realize that there's a girl getting so much heat online right now because she's basically online crying about the fact that she's working a serving job and she's got like high level of education because the jobs that she's being offered that go along with the degree she got, which I now don't remember what it was.
Okay.
The starting pay is not a livable wage. Like she's like, I make more as a server and getting tips. So I hate serving. I want to work in this field. And then of course, a lot of people are coming after her saying like but you need to start at the bottom. You need to climb the ladder. But like,
but it's not livable.
Young people like fell for the lie and thought if I get a university degree, then I will get a good job. But you actually are getting higher paying jobs.
Yeah.
That don't require a degree.
Is it hard for young people? I don't know. I'm so far removed from being young people.
Well, keep in mind, too, it's a lot of parents forcing their kids to go to university and stuff, too.
We were both forced to go to university.
Yeah.
We had no choice.
Yeah, right? And you're like, you got fed it. You have to go to university. And now it's like, go to trade school, people. That's where it's at. Go to trade school. You're
trades
laughing.
And healthcare. You'll always be employable.
Trans funeral homes.
It's true.
Yeah,
it's true.
Absolutely.
Facts, man. And they're hiring. They're going to pay you livable wages.
So is it as hard for young? I don't know. I don't know any young people. So is it really hard for young people the way everyone makes it
I
sound?
Know the people you know. But from what I'm seeing is that because the cost of living has gone so high, and we've talked about this on many other episodes, young people that are coming out of university, the same as I, like I came out of university with roughly $30,000 of debt because I had to do university. I mean, my parents gave me X amount of dollars and I mean, I blew through that in year one.
Yeah,
so really, I think I was like 28 grand in debt when I graduated because I blew through the money they gave me in 1 year. And when I came out, it was... I can't remember what minimum wage was then. If anyone remembers what minimum wage was in 2007, you can let me know.
Okay.
But the cost of living was nowhere near what it is today. So in 2007, no. I can't say for sure, but I even know when we bought our home in 2013, mm-hmm. you could still buy a house in Toronto.
Yeah.
It might have been a bit of a fixer upper, but you could buy a full house in Toronto for $450,000. Oh, and I know that because that was when we were looking to, and we were looking okay. at houses, like full houses, 2-3 bedroom houses for $450,000.
Wild.
And that was still in 2013. And now here we are a decade later. Yep. And if you want the houses we were looking at 10 years ago, most homes in Toronto, it's over a million. Because we were looking at, like, is if you remember, detached? We started looking at fixer-uppers because we had, we had this thought of like buying something really cheap.
Right.
That, you know, because I was also pregnant when we were buying. So we were thinking like, okay, something that one person could afford, one income, like we were purposely looking cheap, right?
God. Even that sentence, one person could afford, it only costs four. Like,
so
what?
That's the shit. So is it really hard for young people? The world has drastically changed. So minimum wage, of course, has gone up. But if you think about it.
The world has changed? Or living in a metro city is
living
changed.
In a metro city. I mean, the world has
that's
changed
not
as
the
well.
World.
But living in a metro city is very, very different.
You can go find a house in Saskatchewan for $200,000.
Absolutely.
You can find one in Newfoundland for probably like $80,000.
Like, there you go.
Know, and it'll be a nice place. But with good a luck lot getting work. And is it tough? I don't know. I mean, you're working a server job here because the job that you really want is going to pay you too little. So go somewhere else and work the same server job.
This is where
with
the
lower cost of living.
This is where the tough decisions come in, though, too, because a lot of these people coming out with degrees probably have degrees where they could have remote work. So they could live in Saskatchewan or Newfoundland. But it's do they want to leave the big metropolitan city? And the problem is most don't.
Yeah.
So it's yeah, it is a decision.
You really can't make that choice and then whine about. I mean, you can do whatever you want. you can do whatever you want, but then the rest of the world might take you a little less seriously if you're choosing to do this thing and then whine about the choice.
This is why this young woman is getting shit on, because she's just pissed. Like, I went and got a degree, and the jobs that are being offered to me that relate to the degree I have are offering me $30,000 to $40,000, and you can't live off of that in the city. No, you can't. She's right.
Yeah.
But then either embrace the server job, find something that can pay you a little more, or you do have to move somewhere a little bit cheaper. It's ridiculous to live in this city.
Oh, it's wild.
So what about massage therapists? Because I see a lot of massage therapists complaining that they can't make enough money doing this, blah, 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 blah. I mean, we know people that make really good money.
I was going to say, I don't know that we should have that issue. I think there's a whole bunch of factors that... Like, I know a massage therapist personally who doesn't charge a premium rate, because everybody right away says, oh, it's only if you charge too much. And a lot of people think that's unethical. That's a whole other discussion.
Right.
But I know a massage therapist personally who does not charge astronomical rates. Like, she's pretty on par with everybody else in the neighborhood she's in. Okay. She's probably North, I think she's North York. Okay. Anyway, she is the breadwinner for her family. Her husband stays home and takes care of the kids.
Oh, wow.
So she supports a family of four on her massage income.
I love that.
And it's because she just works, right? Like, she goes to work, she works full-time hours, and she supports a family of four. Now, the other thing is, they also live within their means. And I know I'm going to get hate for that, because people are like, it's not about living within means. And everyone's right. Everything is really expensive right now. But when I say they live within their means, they're not living in a massive 4-bedroom house in the city.
Right.
You know, they're living in
makes
a smaller place to be more comfortable living off of one income. So is it really, really hard? Yes. Is it harder for young people? Yes. Because if you were raised in Toronto, and so you live here now, you're finishing school,
you're like,
you have all this
home.
Debt, you cannot afford to move out of your parents' house right now.
No.
That is true. It was a little bit easier when I graduated university. So yes, there it's a little harder for young people. But now the young people have to start thinking about what my generation was thinking about. When I was coming out of university, all of my friends were moving to Durham. Why? Because Durham was affordable. Toronto wasn't. I am like one of the few of my close friends from high school that stayed in the city. Yeah. Everybody went east because it was affordable. So now the young people coming out, they might have to go further east or further west.
Or
but
further
this is not the place for you if you want to work a job that, you know, only pays $40,000 a year, because you can't live here.
It's true.
That.
You really can't. Me and my husband, we have one four-legged child, so she obviously cost us a fortune. But the two of us, we work full time so that we can live in Toronto. That's it. Like, I work full-time hours Monday to Friday, 8 hours each day. I do my massage. I love it. Mm. I'm enjoying it. It's my favorite thing ever, which is wild to me, waking up in the morning and actually looking forward to work. Mm-hmm. Like, I only started in 2021, but it's still like every day still blows my mind. Like, blows my mind.
Do you foresee a time when you're gonna be like not mind blown anymore?
You know, I was talking about this with my husband the other day. We were talking about retirement.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, you know, I like, we have to plan for retirement, all that. And he goes, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I said to him, and I go, you know, I don't know if I'm actually ever planning on retiring.
Right.
I think I just really enjoy, you know, it might shift. It might shift on like how I'm doing massage or what I'm doing. I might start teaching. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll write a book. Maybe, you know, you never know what I'm going to do. But I don't see in the foreseeable future of me going, okay, I want to stop doing this. It makes me sad at the thought of it, which sounds kind of corny. But I mean, again, like, I think she's like my idol, but like Grace Chan.
Yeah.
She's in her 80s.
She's old.
Yeah. She's great. She's to me, she's my wizard. And she's just missing a beard, but she's my wizard.
You're this close to putting in a Fu Manchu mustache.
I love it. And she's like, but she's still massaging.
Selling you a gremlin.
I'm down. I would buy anything she's selling.
Anything.
But she's, you know, I remember talking to her, what was it? Maybe like 6 months ago, we sat down and talked for like 30 minutes or something, just going back and forth. And she's doing osteo. She treats the elderly. Mm. She's just shifted what she does. That's right. All. Yeah. And like, her body can still handle it. She's still doing it. And I'm just like, yes. And it's funny because I've always seen older people working and thought to myself, that's so sad. Like, you've earned not being able, like, not having to work. You've been on this planet. You've put in your sweat, blood, and tears. Like, you should be able to enjoy yourself. But then when I look at Grace, I'm like, she is enjoying herself.
Well, that's the thing, is there's a lot of seniors that they go back to work, not because they have to, but because they realize, like, retirement isn't for me. I'm bored. It all depends. Like, my parents both decided.
Wait to be bored.
I mean, yeah, Mark can't wait. But my parents both decided to retire like close to each other so that they, aww, you know, they wouldn't,
so they could do
one
it together,
wouldn't be home and whatever. And let me tell you, I was at a family function last weekend, and somebody said to my mother, so how are you enjoying retirement? And I was just eavesdropping on purpose. I tried not to look, but I was like, I wanted to hear this because I honestly feel that although they waited for it, I think they're a little bored. And so, yes, I was listening, and my mom was like, it's nice to know that I don't have to like get up and be on somebody else's timeline.
Yeah.
But she's like, but I haven't quite like figured out what I want to do with my time. And I'm like, yes, that's exactly it. Like, I see her and my dad both like trying to fill the gaps, but they didn't.
I love that they're acknowledging this.
Yeah. Like, they didn't have hobbies beforehand. All they did was work and raise children. Right. Yep. So they're like, and that's, I've said that to Mark. I'm like, you're so lucky you have hobbies.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have hobbies necessarily right now. Like, one of my friends who is childless said to me, no, but your hobbies, your life. She's like, you have so much fun like doing this and that with the kids and what. And I said, yeah, but they're not going to be kids for very long.
It's true.
Like, our oldest is going to be 10. Like,
yeah, wow.
I'm not going to have little kids for very long. No. So I'm like, I got to figure out what I like to do that's not momming.
Time to discover yourself.
Jesus. The whole other project.
So is massage a hobby for you?
Yes and no. Like, it is a career for sure.
Right.
And at, you know, let's not kid ourselves, at foremost, it is my business.
Do you do it when you don't get paid?
Yes. That's the other thing is like, I just love doing massage. My friend's like, oh, my hand hurts. Come here. And I know there's a lot of people who are like, no, like, we should be respected. We should be paid for this. Like, we're actually doing something, which is funny because when I think about my niece, who's 9, she gave my husband a massage. She's like, oh, I'm going to massage your shoulders. I thought it was really sweet. Mm. And then when she was done, I gave her a $10 bill. And she's like, what's this for? I'm like, because you provided a service. I was like, girl, your skills are worth money. I think I was just trying to teach a lesson. But I still like, I just enjoy massaging. Mm. And like, oh, what you just said, something that sparked, the whole, your mom does enjoy the fact of not living on other people's timelines. And like what that has been something. Oh, I like hated working before I became a massage therapist. But now that I'm self-employed working for my house, that has also been a huge game changer for me in the
because
best
you do
way.
Feel like you're in so much more control of your time.
Yes,
you're working off of your patients and clients' schedules, but you have set that schedule. You have said on Wednesday morning at 10 a.m., I can treat you. You've agreed to that. It's not somebody saying to you, Tylene, you have to be on this conference call at Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Then you're like, well, fuck. I don't want to be there.
Like my Mondays. So my Tuesdays and Thursdays. Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays are my like afternoon, evening shifts. I literally massage to like 10:30, 11 at night. I love it. But they start at 2 p.m., except my Mondays, which starts at 4:30 p.m. because fuck that. It's a Monday. Mm. I don't want to go to work like first thing. I want to fucking enjoy myself. I want to do whatever I want. And I just want to, I don't want to have Sunday and be like, oh, I really like got to get back into, ew, no, gross, no. Yeah. And I love it. It's the best thing ever. Sure, I could open up and get more people in, but like, screw that. I want to love my life. Mm. And I think working for myself is one of the best things I've ever done for my mental stability.
I also love that you just said that too, that you work from like 4:30 to 10 or 2 to 10 or whatever, because that's, you know, when you were talking, Mark, about therapists who are struggling, and a big thing is really they need to put in more hours. Like that's just the
answer.
More
billable hours. You got
to
work.
You need to work
more
billable hours. Yeah. And a lot of times I think it's a lack of thinking outside the box. Like we do have the luxury of being able to set weird hours. Like if you want to not work all day Monday, but you'll work Monday night, cool. You can do that. If you want to work like weekends and take off like Monday, Tuesday, cool, do that. Like there's a way to still fit in a whole bunch of, and there's so many hours in a week. You want to figure out a way to treat, you know, 25 people, 30 people in a week so you can make a little bit more money. Nobody's saying you have to do 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. You can move these hours around. Like when I was first treating, I used to work some days where I would work from 7 a.m. until like 12:30 p.m.
Ew, by the way.
But at the time, if I had a lot of people that would come see me before work. So I would do 2 days a week where I started at 7, but then at 12:30, I took a break until usually like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And that may not work for everybody, but I was young.
Yeah.
And so between 12:30 and 3, I could like go to the gym if I had to like do a load of laundry, if I wanted to.
In my head, I'm like, nap.
Or nap. It's not like that didn't happen. It's not like I never went home and like just rested for that. But I would have like 2.5 to 3 hours every day where I could, or at least the days where I start at 7 a.m. And then I'd go back to work from like 3 p.m. till 8 p.m. So I was actually treating a lot of people on that day, but it was just spread out. And that worked for me when I didn't have kids. Mm. Obviously, that schedule wouldn't work for me now. But when I didn't have kids, that was beautiful because I always knew like the middle of the day, that's mine. I could schedule personal appointments. I would leave and like go get a tan, go get a pedicure. Like,
oh,
it was great.
No, it's
I loved life.
Yeah.
I have just switches.
Your switches.
And it's either it's on or it's off, regardless of the time of day. So if I'm in the mood and the switch is on and it's 7 a.m, cool. This is happening. Nice. Or it's 11 o'clock at night, cool. This is like I've got the same energy that happens all throughout.
Yes.
But when the switch is off, I don't want to do a fucking thing.
Oh.
I won't even pick up my phone. I won't do anything. It's like I'm not doing anything.
But that
today.
Must be hard for like a schedule that's been set.
It is
very hard for us two who work together. He used to say this when we first started working together, and it used to be offensive to me until I actually realized he was 100% right.
Yeah.
He was like, we just have different modes of working.
Oh, yeah.
Because for me, because I take on a lot of the responsibility of like taking kids to their after school activities, I'm the one that cooks. And I mean, that's just for the health and safety of everyone in our home. So,
Mark, I get it. That's my husband. He's the one that cooks for the health and safety of our
relationship. So it's not.
What, you don't like peanut butter sandwiches, guys?
There's no,
like jam
there's
on crackers?
No poor me in this scenario. I just want to say that. I'm not saying that, you know, oh, I have to do all the cooking. No. It's better for everybody if I
make
cook.
A mean grilled cheese.
You know what, he could do that. He can do scrambled eggs, he can do grilled cheese.
You're one better than me, man. I'll just get 2 slices of bread, put some cheese in the meal, and call it a day.
That's true. You know what I watched him do last night for like a late night snack? He took a cinnamon raisin bagel, dry, not toasted, no butter, nothing, slapped two slices of cheddar on it and walked away. And I'm like, what am I looking at right now? What is that? I'm like, do you want me to make you a sandwich?
I was also stoned. So
I was taking cheese, cutting it into slices, and then dipping it in dip.
There
and then just eating it. And I was like, this is a meal.
It's like the most disgusting thing I've ever heard. You guys are meant to be friends. It's disgusting.
My husband comes down. He's like, what is wrong with you?
I'm with him. I'm sorry. It's disgusting. Anyway, the point in the matter is because of that, because I'm always actually partially on my children's schedule right now, when I have work to do, like I schedule, like from this time to this time, I'm going to answer email. Like I don't always put it on the calendar, but it's just, I know there's certain times in the day where like, oh, okay, I've got a gap here. I can actually go get groceries. Oh, I can go home and prep, like chop vegetables for dinner later. Like, it's everything is actually scheduled, whether it's in my calendar or in my brain, but it's scheduled. And because he's this switch on, switch off, suddenly he might be like, they did this to me last night, all of my business partners. It's 9 p.m. and I get a text message from Mark, call me please. I didn't know I was calling into a fucking conference call, and we were on the phone until 10:35 p.m. planning our Calgary conference. I'm like, why, guys? Why? Like, I had this time already set aside for motherfuckers.
Mark's like, but I'm on.
But this is the way it happened. I was on. We went up north. So we winterized our place up north, and then I came back here to do some work. So now the switch is on. She's at home. Like, this is like at 6:30. She's home, and I'm here doing this after we were doing that stuff all day long. And I'm here doing work because the switch is on. And then one of our partners just calls me, not about work, just to ask me how was the conference that I went to on the weekend. And as we're talking about the conference, and I'm saying what I liked, how I think things could have been or what could have made it better, but generally I love the whole thing. And then we started talking about our conference, and she's like, should we call the others in? I'm like, yeah, let's do it, because I'm on, right? So yeah, let's call everybody.
And she works very similarly to Mark.
Let's call everybody in.
They have a style.
They're both on.
Scott and I are very different. We plan things, you know, from this time to this time, I'm in work mode. From this time to this time, I'm not. And these two ambushed us with an impromptu Zoom call. And all of a sudden, I'm planning marketing emails and whatever. And I'm like, what the fuck? How did this happen?
My brain is not in this area right now. How could you do this to me?
So I had a difficult time with massage then. I was working, I had a hard time with
you
that.
You really did, especially near the end.
Yeah, it's like, I'm inactive now, but when I was treating, it's like...
You're paying a fortune for being inactive, on.
But when I was off, I'm like, I don't want to do this. And it was torture. And that's when I kind of realized, like, I can't do this. This is not... Not that I was giving poor treatments, but I wasn't 100% there. And I'm like, this is really, really unfair to somebody that's going to pay me. Even though you're getting a really good stuff going on, because I think I do really good stuff, and you think so too as my patient. But just because I wasn't fully there, I'm like, this is not right.
Yeah, it became really hard for you. But it's funny,
I'm just going through the motions now.
I think all of us have a similar like understanding of like whether when the switch is on and the switch is off. It's just mine works differently. Mine is like, I've mentally prepared to have the switch on from 10 to 3 today. You know, like mentally I know from 10 to 3 I'm here and I'm working, and I know I've got this podcast, then I've got two patients, then I've got another podcast. Like it's already planned. If a wrench gets thrown in there, you've fucked up everything.
How could you?
Whereas like Mark's switch is a little more random because he's the creative guy, right?
And
he's the guy that does the editing. He's the guy that shoots the video.
Reward system.
Yeah.
My reward system is when you finish this, you get to play. And if this takes forever, then fine, you finish it because you're going to get to play.
Right.
After.
So let's say I was the one that edited the podcast. Like, just so you understand I don't, but let's just say it was me.
I know, that's why I was like, whoa.
Let's just say it was me. And I had set aside from 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. today to edit this podcast. Let's say now it's 5 p.m. because now I've got something else that's already in my mind that's where I have to switch to. Then it's okay. So this has to go on pause, and there's an extra...
There's no pause.
45 minutes tomorrow that I'm going to finish this. That would be me, right?
There's no
and
pause.
It would be, now it's 5 o'clock. Now I've moved on. My brain has switched modes. Now I have got to do this project. With Mark, that doesn't happen. So imagine now us two as business partners. Ooh. I have this amount of time that is set for this thing, but he's not really in the mood to do this thing right now. So it gets pushed back. Then suddenly he's in the mood to do this thing. And now have moved on to something else. So for the first few years of us like running Con Ed together and doing stuff together, it was trying to figure, and he would always say, we just have different modes of working. And I didn't quite understand it. And I was like, stop fucking saying that. Like, we just have to make a schedule. But I didn't realize, like, he doesn't work on a schedule. Like, it doesn't work. And eventually... we figured this whole thing out. It's like, I do my things on my schedule.
Yes.
And so when he starts asking me to do something at 11 p.m., I can now just look at him and say, like, I'm not there. Mentally, I'm not there.
I'm not going to get
work done right now because I'm not there. Whereas
I do lists and tasks.
Yes. And if he pulls out his computer at 3 o'clock in the morning and suddenly is going to start working, 6 years ago, I would have been like, what the fuck are you doing? Today, I'm like, oh, he's on right now. And that's fine. It doesn't affect me. Mm. I just might sometimes say to him, yeah, I got to go with that clicking. You got to go to another room. Please do not click behind me while I'm trying to sleep.
Barney to click.
So do you ever have those times when you're treating? You're like, I don't really.
So I think part of my ADHD factors into that part where some like there's different types of ADHD and it's all clumped together now under the one term. Yeah. But there's the masking that a lot of girls did, like a more common in girls, whereas growing up you would mask it more. So you just adapt and like I've always found to be really good at that. Mm. Where it's like, if this is what I need to be right now, I will be that. But I'm always borrowing from a finite source. So if I'm like not into it, I can do it.
Right.
But that means that when I'm done, I'm going to be like drained.
Right.
And then I'm going to be like, oh my goodness. But at the same time too, like it's such a mixture because I'm also really extroverted. Yeah. So I like, you guys are giving energy and I'm just, woo, I'm taking. Right. I don't mind giving back as well, but being around people like, and also massage is very grounding for me. So that's something I've really come to appreciate and not take for granted, that I could have the worst feeling and just like, just completely out of it. Like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can do this. And the moment someone else comes in, it's like I adapt their energy. I adapt that and I'm more grounded. And then things just start to wash away and I'm feel jealous. So much better.
Masking really helps in this profession. Actually.
Yeah, no, masking
being
helps
able
so
to
well.
Match energy and being able to almost be like a chameleon without changing yourself. Yes. Like you're not changing yourself at your core, but you're changing.
I'm still being me.
I change the volume of my voice, the level of energy I'm speaking with, the seriousness of things. You know, if I'm working with an 80-year-old woman versus a 22-year-old, dude, like the way that
I match them. Yeah.
Masking is very beneficial.
When you're not into it, is it apparent?
I would say no.
No.
No, I would say no because, okay, this is the corniest thing I've ever said and I keep saying it and it feels really weird, but I think my niche, this is going to sound so lame. Oh my God. I hope people rip me apart. but I think my niche is my personality.
I'm not going to rip you apart.
Okay. Because I truly think a lot of people, like I think I'm an okay therapist. There's so much room for improvement.
Right.
But I truly believe a lot of people come back to me because they like
you.
Me.
They like you.
Yeah. I think that's really, truly it. Because there's times where I'm just like, I could do so much better. Or like I'm learning new things and I'm like, oh, and I keep a journal. I keep a massage journal and I write into it like things that I learned, things that like have hit me, things that are confusing me, things that I'm struggling with, whatever. But that's I always go back and reflect upon it to see like where I've come from. Have I addressed that? Right. Have I let that fall to the side? Whatever.
You watch the game tape.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I study the game tape hard. Yeah, so like I think about where I used to be and I'm like, oh, wow, I can't believe that's how I used to treat. And I still got results of that. Cool. Right. But like, I hope I'm doing better, but I'm still like, oh, my God, I do so much better.
Do other therapists, you know, watch the game tape? I don't think a lot of people
I don't
do
know.
That.
I don't know anybody that does. I haven't talked to anyone that says they do.
Do you know
I mean,
anyone
I'm
that
sure
does
there's
that?
People that do, but
I don't know if I've ever met anyone who journals the way Tylene's talking about.
I just mean like is mindful as to what's going on and how did I do here and could I have done this better or is there
something? I think there's actually a lot of therapists who do that.
Like analyze
maybe,
their work at the end of the day.
Maybe not even consciously, but I think there's a lot of therapists, specifically like we were talking about conferences a lot on this episode. The therapists that I meet at conferences, they're the type of people that are always just trying to learn like what else could I incorporate? And they want to share and get ideas from other therapists,
but
they're really into that.
Do you ever finish a treatment and you play it back at the end of the day and say, fuck, I really should have probably tried this, or I really, for maybe spent too much time addressing this. Yeah,
I do that regularly. I probably do it like daily. As I go over the massages that I did, and I'm like, okay, I really like that I did this. This person like that. I'm like, maybe I could have done this different, like all that kind of stuff. Something I also do every 6 months is, which is great because some of my clients are like, nah, which is so funny. But in person, I go to my clients and I go, hey, I'm doing, this is like my self-assessment month. Not self-assessment, it's my assessment month.
Yeah.
But I go, hey, is there like, you know, you've come, and I do it with my like regular clients. I'm like, why do you keep coming back to me?
Nice.
And I'm like, why do you keep coming back to me? What is it you like? But also like, is there something that I've been doing that you're actually overly not fond of, but you keep coming back to me because you like something else that I'm doing? Mm-hmm. Like, is there anything that you wish that I would change up?
Or you want to refine the experience.
Yeah. I'm asking literally for assessment from my clients.
That's good.
I don't know a lot of people who do that.
I do that every 6 months.
That's good.
It's helped me so much. Like I've put so much more time into head, neck, shoulders. Before I think I was putting... on average, like 7 to 9 minutes into head, neck, shoulders. Right. Now I'm doing like 15, sometimes 20 minutes head, neck, shoulders. Right. And people, and I keep asking for feedback and they're like, oh yeah, like, because I mean, clinic sense is like, oh, rate your therapist from 1 to 9 or 1 to 10 and all that sort of stuff. And like, you know, people could leave feedback, but most time people don't.
Most time people are exactly as you said before. Most time people are leaving feedback on you. They like you. Yeah. So they're like, she's a 10.
Yeah.
Because they like you.
Oh my God, I love her so much. I'm like, okay, but like, what about the treatment? Is the treatment helping you? Mm-hmm. Is it progressing? And like I could do assessments and see like, are you feeling better? Mm-hmm. But also like the treatment itself, are you enjoying it?
Right.
Well, that's the thing is when you do your follow-up assessments within a treatment plan, yes, you're asking subjective information and they're telling you, yes, this is working, but it's a little bit different than what you were saying when you do your every 6 month assessment. Mm-hmm. Is there anything I could do better? Is there anything you don't necessarily, because that when you're doing your regular assessments, they're not going into depth that much. It's more like, am I better than I was 3 weeks ago when we started this treatment plan? Yeah, I am. I'm walking upstairs easier. I'm moving more freely. Yeah, I'm better. Yeah. But they're not saying things to you like when you just talked about the head, neck, shoulders, it brought me back to a very uncomfortable point in my career. It was very early in my career where the chiropractor that owned the clinic that I was working at said to me that one of my patients complained.
Oh.
And she complained because she, in her words, she would arrive on time for her treatment, but she always felt like we finished like a minute or two early. Like it was a silly complaint about a couple of minutes. But anyway, it was the follow-up that actually got me thinking, because I was a very technical therapist back then. Like if somebody came in with a shoulder issue, I was doing all the assessments I could do on the shoulder and trying to really figure out where is the shoulder issue coming from. And I would be very, very technical in the way I worked. So when I would work with her, I would focus on what the complaint was and I would get to that point. And then, yeah, maybe there was one or two, you know, 1 to 4 minutes left on the hour. Mm-hmm. But like in my mind, we were done. Right. So it was just like, okay, whatever, blah. And I didn't think too much of it. But then her follow-up piece was, you know, like, I know we're done, because that's what the chiropractor said. She came to my defense and she said, well, maybe it's just because you're done with the treatment that day. Mm-hmm. And she goes, yeah, but you know, it might be nice to maybe have like 5 minute head massage or what, like she just brought it, or maybe my hands, like maybe something that isn't necessarily. And when she said that, I was like, huh. I like actually had never really considered that. If there's a few minutes left, why wouldn't I maybe just end with something super relaxing? But it wasn't in my style then. But then I started incorporating that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like what's 4 minutes of my time to like make somebody feel good? Like totally. It was the easiest little fix. But at the time, being a new therapist, I was like, oh, she complained about me.
Oh no, she had an opinion.
I was so upset.
I think that's something that I think is really great for us therapists. And like for anyone listening, if, yeah, I definitely had some clients who were like, oh, everything's great. And I was like, yo, wait. And like, it's a lot of how you approach people and talking to people, which I think a lot of people still are trying to figure out how to talk to people. But, you know, one thing I do is I explain to them, I go to them and I go, hey, this is a safe space. You are allowed to say something negative. I'm not going to ask you to leave. I'm not going to never treat you again. I'm looking at this as feedback. And I explained to them, so, you know, it's not everything negative needs to sound negative. So I tell people and I go, hey, like, this is feedback. You're allowed to criticize me. You're allowed to say that you don't like something, because guess what? This is going to help me give you a better massage. Mm-hmm, this mm-hmm. is going to help you get, you got to explain the benefits to them so that people are less afraid to give criticism. I think so many people are so afraid to say something negative face to face as opposed to behind a screen. So it's super helpful. And I did find, yeah, there's still some people who are like, oh, everything's great. But with that setup, I found more people were willing to be like, you know, I think like you go like deep into my back, but I think that's the only place I like it deep. Like, I don't want it deep anywhere else. I'm like, okay, thank you. Awesome. Great. I'm going to note that on your file.
Do you guys pick up on that kind of stuff when someone's not expressing it?
Yeah, I mean, being a people person, like I love being around people. I'm always reading body language. I'm huge into reading body language. So like, it's something, it's a strength I think we should all really try to develop more as people who work with people. And I, you know, we have things that deal with communication, but I find that a lot of RMT, like classes, workshops, it's communication, like try to get a health history intake and try to, you know, make sure you're getting all the information.
Versus
but I
the
think
psychology
that,
is.
Yeah, I think we also need classes on like how to talk to people. And it's not to sit there and be a mental therapist. It's so that we can actually talk to people, so that people are willing to give us the information.
Did you guys
and
have a class like that at your school?
Let me think.
Because I had that at CCMH, and I had that, and I delivered that when I was teaching at school.
Oh, interesting. Because I think we had therapeutic relationships,
right?
Which I thought was very important and necessary. A lot of people thought it was a joke. And I was like,
that's
guys, yeah. And I was like, guys, you're working with people. And I'm like, I can name every socially awkward person in this class right now that needs this. I was like, come on, you guys.
But, and also, as you said, many therapists are very successful, not necessarily because they're technically the best therapist, but because they understand how to relate to people.
Yes.
I attribute majority of my success in this profession as just being able to relate to people and figure out what they need in that moment. And yes, of course, you know, I do also, you know, have a diploma in massage therapy and know how to do that too.
It helps.
But I also know a bunch of people that have left the profession and they couldn't cut it. And you want to know what? They're fucking horrible with people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're horrible with people.
There's a therapist I do know that definitely rubs people the wrong way.
Right.
And other,
I could think of
other
someone
therapists
too.
Have tried to approach this person. I didn't even pick up on it. It must be Monday, except it's Tuesday. I was home with feverish children yesterday, if that makes any difference, or all weekend. There's a therapist who's just really like leaves a bad taste in people's mouth. Like, you know, people don't necessarily love this therapist.
No.
And other therapists have tried to have a conversation and say like, this might be why you're having trouble. But the therapist is not willing to hear it because technically they think that their skills are good. They take a lot of education. So what's the issue?
Oh,
right.
My gosh, like, but I'm in my head. We're probably not. But like, is this the same person?
Probably not.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, understanding people and therapeutic relationships is really, really important. Like you said, they trust your patients trust everything you say. And to develop a trusting relationship in a very vulnerable situation, that is like half the battle, is getting somebody who's going to just be able to relax and feel comfortable on your table. That's when the therapy is going to be most effective, because their body will be willing to actually work with whatever you're doing passively. And if they trust you, they're more likely to do the therapeutic exercise. Like all of it goes together. You have to understand people. If you are a socially awkward knob, well, you're not going to be very successful.
And I would like to stress to people that's listening, I'm not saying that you have to talk these people's ears off, because that is not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that when you are talking to your clients, patients, that is where you're trying to be a people person. And it's not a people pleaser, a people person trying to understand people. Because yes, I have some clients who I mean, I'm sure a lot of us have had this where people get on the table and they just release everything. Mm. Everything that they've been holding in their tissue, they just let it all out. And you're hearing things like, okay, it happens, fair. But then I also have clients who are, no, I don't want to talk. Okay, cool. We're not going to talk at all during this session. But I'm still talking to you before the session, mm-hmm. and I'm still talking to you after the session.
You're checking in every so often too. Yeah. So there's still, yeah, understanding how to talk to people.
When you're sitting around the dinner table, or you're sitting around the bar with your friends, and they're all talking about the shit that goes on at work, how hard is it to not let out the stories of the stuff that people say when they're on your table, because all of this confidential shit, but this is a really good fucking story. And I wish to God I could just share this with a bunch of people. Is that hard for you?
It's interesting because, like, on one side of things, my therapist says it's a superpower that ADHD people have, where it's like, I've already forgotten. already forgotten. And that's one thing I tell my clients all the time. I'm like,
that is true.
I mean this in the best, nicest way possible, but everything you're dumping me right now,
yeah.
I tell them that my door frame is magic. And I'm like, that is my mind eraser door frame. Once I walk out of my door frame, it's gone. Like, it's not in my head anymore.
Can you explain to Mark that also that we don't ask follow-up questions. We don't care about details. Like, it is so unimportant to us, because anytime I do tell him a story, like, not about a client, but if I'm telling him a story, you know, maybe a friend told me something.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, what did she say? What did she do after that? What happened? And I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know.
And he's like, why don't you know anything? I'm like, it doesn't affect my life.
It's gone.
It's gone. It's I don't know.
Don't get me wrong. There is some stories that I do remember, mm-hmm. and I'm just like, whoa! But
it's hard to hold those back.
Oh, man. There's some stories where you're just like, oh my God.
It's so hard. Yeah.
No, there's some, but more often than not, I'm like, this, it's just not my problem. It's not my circus, not my monkeys. Mm. Like, I don't, in the nicest way possible, I don't give a shit. Right. It's just because if I did, I feel like I would be like a lot of therapists who are
just absorb everything.
They're absorbing everything. They're so mentally like exhausted. They're sad. They're depressed.
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't give away too many details, but I had someone that came to get a massage from me after the Syrian bombing. Mm. And it was right after that they escaped from it. They had dealt with everything. Mm-hmm. And they were just telling me everything on the table. And I was like, I might need a therapy session after this. But like, I left the room and I didn't actually, like, I was actually impressed. I didn't carry that weight with me.
Oh. That was actually part of her email of what she wants to talk about today. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
You said the idea of holding space for your patients, but not carrying it with you.
Which is hard.
A lot of people find that really, really difficult. And there are therapists who admit they're just flat out awkward. Like, they purposely don't encourage conversation in the treatment room because they won't know how to deal with somebody when they do unload, or if they do start crying, or that, you know, if things do come up.
Yeah.
So they purposely keep things very, their boundaries are strong. Like, yeah. It's very much like, what is your problem? Oh, you have a shoulder problem. Say, okay, this is what we're going to do. And there's no conversation otherwise. Mm. And I mean, that's protective for them. Do you guys think it's doing a disservice to the patient or no? Because they're treating the physical.
I think there's some clients that
like that. This is part of watching the game tape.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Are you someone that's going to watch the game tape or not? So, if I'm someone that watches the game tape, then I realize this is a me problem.
Mm.
And I shouldn't be closing the doors off with this client in allowing this person to just be in this moment because I can't deal with it. Then I should recognize this is a me problem and I should probably take some steps to do something about it. But you don't know that unless you watch the game tape.
Yeah.
Do you know though? Because for me, I feel like I know the minute I finish a treatment, I know when, or I feel like I know when, like, that was a really good treatment.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Like, I feel like I know when, like, I just did a really good fucking
it
treatment for this person.
It actually gets me high.
Yeah. Like that's a really good feeling. And I'll give you an example. I have a patient who does like to unload. But the last couple of times that I was with her, I actually felt like the unloading was counterproductive. Hmm. Like, I felt like this wasn't helpful for her. It just became like a bitching session for an hour. And this wasn't productive. Yeah. And we weren't getting to where we needed to be with other things. And so the last time she came in, I framed it as, we're going to do something a little bit different today. Mm-hmm. I really feel I'm getting the vibe from you that you really need to relax. You've had a lot of things going on in your life, mentally, emotionally. Like, I think we're going to do a very relaxing type of treatment today, not typically what she asks me for. Yeah. And she was just like, okay, I trust you. Like you said, you're the expert. I trust you. And there just wasn't a lot of talking. Any talking, I kept it really focused on her, like on her breathing and things, whatever. But there wasn't a lot of like the bitching going on. And I just felt like it was the most productive treatment I've had with her in a really long time. And afterwards, I said, how did you feel about that? Because it was very different. And she said, I think that was the most relaxing treatment I've ever had. And she's like, I actually feel really, really good right now. I was like, great. And I also didn't have to listen to an hour of bitching. So there might be times when shutting that down is a good thing. I just felt like there were times when she was like getting so worked up. So for example, I was working on her right shoulder one time. She's getting so worked up about telling me about something. But at the same time, she's going to me, you can use more pressure. Like she's telling me deeper, deeper, deeper. And I'm like, your words are saying something your muscle tissue is not.
Yes.
Like if I start digging in, I'm like, you're literally pushing me out without even realizing it because she was so worked up. Oh, and I'm like, no, I can't do that right now. Like that's not going to be beneficial for you.
What if something comes up on the table that is super relatable to you? Do you have a harder time leaving that inside the treatment room? Like, I'll give you an example. Like, my father passed away in December.
Yeah.
And anytime I'm having conversations and someone's talking about, you know, death of a family member, mm-hmm. like, I wear that heavy now.
Yeah.
Right. It never would have happened before, but because, you know, I was recently in that moment. Exactly. And so does that happen with you guys when something comes out in a treatment and it's really, really relatable to you? Does that make it more difficult to just keep it there and not bring it home with you?
I mean, that is an interesting thing because I often find myself indulging it. Earlier, you were talking about having a switch.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know what? The most famous person in my life that you'll always hear about is my therapist. I reference her all the time. But this is something I brought up with my therapist. And this also might be due to like childhood trauma. Fair enough. I have a switch.
Right.
And it can just, my switch allows me to, it can just turn things on and off. Mm-hmm. Just like that. I could be talking to somebody about something and then all of a sudden I'm just go, okay, now it's your time to turn over. It's almost like a personality switch even. It's like I'm a different person. I'm like, okay, time to turn over. Let's have you turn over now. Mm-hmm. And it's like everything we were just talking about didn't even happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I could go right into a silent massage and I'm like, all right, let's feel how this muscle, like it's just something about my brain can like just like, just switch back and forth,
just
back and forth.
Just throw it into one part of your mind, lock it in there, and it
ceases to exist, kind of thing. Which I learned like a coping mechanism. It's a safety, protective thing about trauma. It's like you could just shut that away, and it's like it doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Which now is my superpower for massage, where I'm able to have people say things and it could hit close to home. And I'm just like, or I deal with a lot of things with humor. So that's another thing. Who was it? Oh, someone at the Canadian Massage Conference. Who was it? They were talking about one cool thing you could try doing.
Troy was
talking about going to like comedy and doing and doing like improv and stand. I was like, I want to do that. Like, oh my God, I want to do that so bad because I make my clients laugh a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I deal with trauma a lot. I find that Robin Williams movie where he deals with like sick kids and he dresses as a clown and like all that.
Patch Adams.
Oh my gosh. It's so helpful. When I get people laughing on the table, the amount of stuff I can do and like how their body reacts is wildly different. And I've just found that the way people feel afterwards as well. I have people come in my room and they're so bothered, they're so upset. And then by the end of the thing, I have them laughing. And I know, like, that's not my job. My job is to work with the muscles and tissues, but I just can't help it. I'm so appealing. Again, boom, it's terrible. But I get people laughing and we're joking about things. And it really helps. So with things for me, with my dad passed away when I was 19. Mm-hmm. And I've had a long time to heal from it. I deal with it with laughter now. Mm-hmm. So like I will put out jokes about things like to do with my dad. And then people are like, that's terrible. Your dad's passed. And I'm like, ha, 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 ha. And they're like, that's sick. But they laugh. And it's like, and that's the thing is like, I just love making people laugh. So yeah, I think too, like a lot of things that are a little like, ooh, I just end up making people laugh about it. And yeah, it's, yeah, I just don't hold it. And the crying thing that you brought up earlier, I have a speech now because it happens so often that if I know people are, at least if I get the sense in the beginning that somebody might be emotional.
Right.
And in the beginning I say, I go, hey, by the way, I've had emotional releases on my table and it's totally okay. I'm not going to be weirded out by it. Now there's, if you know ahead of time, if you start crying, do you want me to continue massaging like it's not happening? Do you want me to stop massaging and give you space? And if you want to, you could end the massage. I'm not going to force you to get a massage while crying. If you just need a moment, whatever you need, like, is there ways that you deal with crying that you know of that you want me to do? Like, you want me to know of right now?
That's a really important conversation. Or do you want to
wait? Who taught you this? Was this something you just...
No, it's just something I ended up developing because I had, I remember my first bit when, like, first 6 months of massaging, I had quite a few emotional releases.
Yep.
And I had one guy who wanted to end the massage immediately. I was like, that's totally okay. I want you to know this is fine. And I thought I was never going to see him again. He showed up a month later for his next massage. I was like, oh, wow. And I continued to massage him. I had other people who were like, no, just keep massaging and pretend like I had so many different things that I felt like the most important thing people need to know is that it can happen and it's okay. It's very common. Many people do it. And I'm just here for you and however you need me. And sometimes that's me leaving.
I want you to do a video on this topic for Massage Therapy Media. And I'm going to put
I'll totally put all over the place
because if, when I was treating a lot, I would dread those moments because I wouldn't know what to do.
It would never
occur to me to do any of these things that you're saying. Maybe to have that conversation about, you know, if this happens, what's your preferred mode of things that happen here?
Yeah.
Because I would just be like, do you want water and a Kleenex? Like, because I get uncomfortable in that. And I think a lot of people would benefit from hearing this type of thing.
Totally. Yeah. I'll drop all the tips and tricks for that. Everything. Yeah.
We'll set that up.
Yeah. Well, guys, is there anything else we want to talk about before we do wrap up? Because I have a patient. Like, I actually have to go be a massage therapist now. I could sit and talk to Emma Stone all day, but I got to get moving. And so does she. She's got a treat in 2 hours.
Yeah, fair enough. Steve's having the time of his life with Jimmy.
He's having so much fun over there. I love it.
His arms are up. He's like, fuck yeah.
We have to include them in the selfie for sure.
Oh, totally. Next time, I got to bring the hands where his middle fingers are up.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Let's see that.
Did we cover
pretty much everything in your email?
I wasn't sure if we were going to be able to segue into it, but we did it smooth.
I didn't even know what was in this email.
That's true.
I didn't even know there was an email.
Yeah, just suddenly you appeared on our calendar for him. Yeah.
You just will it and it happens, man.
It just happens.
Sweet.
But I appreciate you always coming and sharing insights.
I love it.
This was good.
I think people really learn from these types of informal conversations, right? I mean, even that last piece, as Mark said, there's a lot of people that could really use help in dealing with other people's emotions. If you're not a people person, if you don't have the ability to compartmentalize, which I've had that ability my entire life, and now you're making me wonder, like, is this a trauma response? Like, shit. Because I've always been that way. I mean, Mark used to say that to me, like, we could literally be in the middle of like the most stressful, like we're having a mental breakdown, I'm in tears, and then I'm like, I have a patient in 5 minutes, and all of a sudden he sees me like smiling to my patient. He's like, how the fuck do you do that? I'm like, how do you not do that? Like, I have to do that. I've got this guy here. I'm not going to cry in front of him that like my life is falling apart. I'm going
to
smile.
That would be me.
It's going to be so relaxing.
Because I wallow in shit and I wear it on my sleeve. Like, it's, I can't hide anything.
I can always tell when Mark's in some sort of mood, yeah, and he'll say to me, I'm fine. And I like just now give him a look. I'm like, you've been telling me this lie for 15 years. Like, I know when you're not fine. I know when you're fine. You are not fine. Tell me why you're not fine.
I'm a pretty simple read.
But me, on the I'm other like a hand, Dr. I could be Seuss screaming book. Inside. You have no idea.
Yeah, you have no idea. But I'll deal with it when it's appropriate for me to deal with it.
Yes.
And it's not right now, so I'm not going to deal with it right now. It's probably in the shower.
Curled up in the corner.
Oh, my safe space.
Well, thank you for coming back again. And now, once I am done treating today and you are done treating today, we need to talk about getting you back in to film some video.
Yeah, gladly. Let's do that. I'm so happy to be here, guys. Thanks for letting my craziness come back each time.
We love it.
We love your craziness. Right on. You guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. Peace.